Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, good morning to you. Welcome back. What a difference a week, even a day, makes in the markets, as the past few days have been fast and furious. I would like to spend some time today addressing some of our clients' most urgent or frequent questions, and if time permits, perhaps a high-speed tour around global markets would be helpful. So with that, Burkhard, let me begin by asking you about Wall Street. Much of it is down 20% or more at the moment as we're speaking here on Wednesday, April 9th. So we've officially entered a bear market. Who will save the day?
April is the cruelest month, reads the first line of the last century's most important poem, The Wasteland, written by Nobel Prize winner T.S. Eliot in 1922. When Donald Trump announced Liberation Day in the Rose Garden on April 2nd, just last week, I couldn't help memorizing this opening line. The first thing I would state here in response to your question, Dan, is that this bear market is very different from previous ones. That's because it's the first manufactured U.S. bear market that I can think of. For better or worse, it wasn't caused by the usual suspect like the business cycle, over leverage, bank run, or financial contagion. And therefore, it could be reversed almost as quickly as it was manufactured. There are various scenarios under which Donald Trump himself could save the day. A deal with Europe, China, Canada could be among them. If that doesn't happen, the risk that something will break is rising by the day, I'm afraid. That's visible in the sharp increase in credit spreads and 10-year yields, and also in the drop in consumer sentiment that we've seen. Remember that credit crises usually cause bear market. But good enough, today, the Fed is in a much better position to firefight than it was in the past. Since 2008, the global financial crisis, it much expanded its tool belt and would thus be the second line of defense to save the day. Remember, for example, how the Fed, the Treasury, and the FDIC together stemmed the Silicon Valley banking crisis just about 2 years ago in March 2023, when it quickly insured all depositors of the failed banks. And that's why Fed Chair Jerome Powell on April 4th rightly signaled restraint on further easing and suggested that rate cuts aren't on the table just yet. But the Fed will step in, let me say that clearly, to save the day if need really be and requires that.
So, Burkhard, coupled with the current realities of U.S. trade policy, the jury is still out on whether the U.S. is heading into recession, stagflation, or nothing, or if this is only hitting the wealthy, so to speak, as President Donald Trump explained.
You're right. The jury is out, but time is running fast. And of course, we heard the new policy wasn't designed to weaken Wall Street, but to strengthen Main Street. But you know, the problem with that is that 65% of all, and actually 87% of all U.S. households, let me repeat that, 87% of all U.S. households with incomes higher than $100,000 a year are invested in Wall Street. So, and in addition to that, more than half, or $50 trillion worth of U.S. stocks were held by private U.S. households last year. About half of that is owned by baby boomers, and in addition to that, $15 trillion worth of stocks were held by U.S. pension funds. So a 20% loss on Wall Street equals a wealth tax of more than $12 trillion to more than two-thirds of all American households. Add to that the fact that tariffs are taxes. It's debatable whether U.S. consumers or U.S. retailers pay for them. But the tariffs are a tax that's levied on the U.S. private sector. There's no beating around the bush. So it's impossible to me to think that Wall Street and Main Street are two different places. More than ever, I would argue, Wall Street and Main Street are married at the hip and the shoulder. And that's why the double tax whammy, a wealth tax in form of a bear market, plus a consumer tax in form of tariffs, are indeed risking a consumer-led recession or even taxation.
So, Burkhard, what do you suggest investors do at this point? Should they stay or should they go?
They should stay. They should stay. For one, because, look, this nightmare might go away. That's still a significant probability. Two, the 20% drop suggests that most of the damage is done. Compare this to post-war bear markets. Then history suggested over the next 12 months, markets should be up 12%. Again, that's the historic average. Over the next 3 years, they should be up almost 30%. And over the next 5 years, they should be up around about 50%. That's just comparing to history. And last but not least, let me just say fundamentally, U.S. companies are not only still in good, solid shape, they're great at dealing with adversity. American companies are innovative. American companies are resilient. And they will overcome. And meanwhile, there are three more things, I think, to consider. The first one is, how unsettling is this experience to you as an investor? If you're losing sleep, or if you've been losing sleep last week, then you should probably reassess if your strategy really suits your desires, and possibly shift to a more conservative strategy with less downside, but also less upside. Two, if you're active and experienced, then you may actually want to take advantage of flashing red volatility, because this is not sustainable. This will pass. And you can sell volatility. How is that done? Well, it's usually done by selling call or put options. This is something you should get advice on. But you can sell the call or put options, for example, on single stocks or stock indices, and when you sell them these days with volatility very high, you receive a high premium, much higher than it was 1 and 2 weeks ago. But you should make sure that the possible outcomes of selling a call or put option do actually suit your medium-term investment objectives. And three, and this is very important, I think, you can also just look through this, given where we are, and view the correction or the bear market, which it has already become in such a short matter of time, as a buying opportunity. And we think that it has created some powerful buying opportunities. For example, in the broad-based sell-off, which is indiscriminate in many areas and opened opportunities in investing into stocks in the energy transition, in the innovation economy. Look, this ain't going to go away. AI and innovation are going to be even more important post this. Or into longevity, what, you know, sometimes we call the silver surfer economy.
Well, Burkhard, very valuable guidance and takeaways as investors continue to navigate these uncertain and volatile markets. I did mention at the beginning that it would be nice if you could provide our listeners, our clients, with a high-speed tour around global stock markets. What do you think U.S. investors should make of them at the moment?
Sure. So let's start with Asia, where two things stand out. First, expect the Chinese government to be all in. With a new 104% tariff on all U.S. imports from China, the world's two biggest economies effectively fence themselves off from each other. After 25 years of global supply chains and globalization, no wonder this is market negative. Clearly, yuan depreciation is one way for Beijing to compensate. Note, the yuan has just hit the lowest level since 2007, and note that Chinese bond yields are now trading below Japanese bond yields. But to be clear, China's best response here is not to play with the currency or to interfere in currency markets, I should rather say, but its best response is to boost domestic consumption. And Beijing will now double up. Investors looking to take advantage of this policy stimulus will find it, we believe, in China's high-yielding domestic sectors like consumer staples, financial services, and also in its global EV cost leaders. The other economy in Asia that stands out is India. While China is primarily an export economy of exporting manufactured goods, India, good enough, exports services which are not subject to tariffs. What's more, President Modi seems to be on better terms with Donald Trump than President Xi. His team is said to be working full speed on a deal with the U.S. And what's more, India's economy and stock market have fundamental attractions. Its exposure to tariffs is comparatively low, at least in comparison to China. It benefits from infrastructure investments taken by Modinomics over the last 10 years, healthy demographics, its cheap and hungry labor force, high domestic growth, which is expected to remain between 6 and 7% over the next few years, a strong IT sector, and arguably an inexpensive stock market. So once again, a sell-off creates opportunity in our view too. Moving on to Europe, whose markets have outperformed the U.S. in the first quarter of this year, investors still ask if the global asset allocation rotation trade is still on, and arguably it still has legs to run. In the European Monetary Union, EPS, earnings per share, are at a record high, and its MSCI EMU trades at 14 times forward earnings. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has arguably done more to European policy cohesion and its new focus on growth and competitiveness than any previous president. Germany, as we discussed last time, is preparing its biggest post-war fiscal package. And the current sell-off has created opportunities, especially in domestic sectors and with the famous Mittelstand, its SME stocks. And meanwhile, forgive me for sounding like a broken record, Switzerland once again stands out, a small country in the heart of Europe. That's because its currency is the world's strongest, as is proving again in the last few days and this week. It's defensive, it pays high dividends, and politically, the country should be able to do a deal with the U.S. And last but not least, let me mention that my favorite, at least travel destination, frontier markets, are currently and surprisingly enjoying a rare week in the sun. In my Viewpoints letter, which I'll be publishing tomorrow, I'm charting their relative performance against the MSCI US. And to many viewers' surprise, it shows the strongest outperformance of frontier markets that I have seen for long. But do take this with a grain of salt. It really shows, arguably, that when a hurricane hits, it helps to be far away from it.
Well, Burkhard, as always, very helpful clarity, guidance as we continue to navigate through these uncertain times. Thank you for sharing with us some thoughts on who might save the day and how this week is being felt around the world. So your commentary came at a great time today, Burkhard. Do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next week.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Dan. Always a great pleasure to connect to you. All the best and fingers crossed for the job today.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.